We appreciate that a lot. We have visitors for which we're grateful. Unfortunately, some of our visitors are having to leave a few by few, and we had so many to begin with. We have fewer now. Others of you are planning to leave. We want to thank you again for coming and for helping us in the meeting. I don't really believe that some of these people understand the amount of good that they have contributed to the meeting. I tried to tell some of them that, but they say, oh, the pleasure has been ours. Well, the pleasure has not all been yours, nor the good that has been done has not all been someone else. You have contributed to that, and we want you to know that, and it's helped the meeting a lot. Now, we do want you to know that we're still going to have a meeting when you're gone, and that's going to be good, too, but we've appreciated your being here and your help and your support in every way. I have become a little hoarse, and that's a thing that I thought I wouldn't do. I just don't do that much anymore, unless I come to Plainview, and that seemed like that always happened. And I remember what Brother Vivian Pritchard told me one time. I came for the meeting, and of course I'd had that problem in a meeting or two before, and he said, now Truman, he said, I don't want you to go crazy this year and every night after church go somewhere and sing half the night. He said, take care of yourself and take care of your voice. And I always think about that. Sounds so much like him. And I've tried to be careful and I've tried to rest. One of the things that bothers me most is when I get tired, I get hoarse. I'm not especially tired, but I guess when you use your voice like I've used mine, you have a tendency to get hoarse. And when we have a crowd like we had Sunday morning, I just can't help but talk loud because I'm excited and I love it and we've had good participation in the meeting. I'll try to take it easy and have a voice throughout the meeting. Today I want to talk to you for just a few minutes about the responsibilities of men in the home. Now, I want you to remember that Sunday when I announced these subjects that I told you that they were not designed and arranged to rebuke and to chastise people. You know, people don't like to be gotten on to all the time, and that's not the purpose of these talks at all. But remember, I told you they were to teach and inform and to help us in our responsibilities and our obligations as we fulfill our responsibilities in our homes with our families. And I hope that you accept these things in the same attitude in which they're given. If I talk to you this morning about things that I need, surely that others will profit by that too. And as men in the home, as fathers or as husbands, we have duties and responsibilities we need to fulfill. And I think it's very evident from the lesson that we studied yesterday morning that the homes are very important and the foundation of many, many principles that we need in our lives, in the workplace and among our friends and our neighbors and wherever we're involved all over the world. What comes from the home is going to determine what happens there as well. You know, Brother Hazleton had a talk Saturday in the program, It Begins at Home. And that is the truth. In so many cases, we really need to take care of our home lives and take care of our responsibilities in the home. Remember that the home originated in the mind of God and was set up for the good of man. He saw that it wasn't good for man to be alone. And that's what brought about the establishment and the organization of the home. One of the first things that you and I, as gentlemen, need to remember that we have certain responsibilities that are ours that other people cannot fulfill. We need to understand that, and then we need to shoulder those responsibilities and do our part. And I think that begins when we exchange vows that we accept the responsibilities of the head of the family, and as the husband of a wife, and perhaps later the father of children. You know, when the man was made, or the woman was made and brought to the man, Adam said, this is now bone of my bones, and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. For this cause shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. I think this is the first responsibility that we have. Remember that we leave father and mother, and we cleave to our wives. I think there are a lot of men in the world that have not understood that. Nor have they accepted the responsibility to leave father and mother and cleave to their wives. So we need to consider what that means and understand what it means and then fulfill our responsibilities to our wives. Now that doesn't mean that that relieves us of all of our responsibilities to our families. I suppose that as children of families, we have responsibilities to them as long as they live. I talked to some of you recently as I've come here about your responsibilities to your parents. You know, when they grow older and they become aged and infirm, we have responsibilities. And I've seen many of you over the years who have taken care of those responsibilities. I appreciate people who do that. There are some in the world who do not. So when we take a wife, that doesn't relieve us from those responsibilities, but it certainly gives us added responsibility that we have not had before, and we need to learn to assume those responsibilities. How many of you can remember a time when you stood before one or three or many people, and you said, "I, Bert, take thee, Pat, to be my lawfully wedded wife, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish, till death do us part." Now those were not obligations. I mean, those were not options, those were obligations. One fellow said, "I thought they were options, and when it said better or worse, I chose better. When it said in sickness or in health, I chose health." Well, sure, we like things that are good. But you know, these were vows that we made, and we took upon ourselves responsibility to our wives and to our families. For better, for worse. Some of you have heard me say at one time or another, when Stella and I celebrated our 35th wedding anniversary, now that's been a good little while ago, I came in and told her one day, I said, "You know, we married for better or worse, and I tried for 35 years to figure out what that meant." And I said, "I think I finally figured it out." And she said, "What do you think that means?" I said, "I think that means that you couldn't have done any better and I couldn't have done any worse." Well, that was wrong. You know, I shouldn't have said that, Bert, but see, that's not really what that means. There have been very good times for us, but there have been some times that have not been so good. But we still had responsibility in those times that were not good. And fellas, we need to remember that. We took on these responsibilities. We made a vow, and the Bible said it's better not to make a vow than to make one and not keep it. So we need to start right at the very beginning and remember that we, as husbands and fathers, have taken responsibilities that we must fulfill. And perhaps the very beginning of that was the bond of matrimony. Number two, the husband is to be the head of the wife. This was designed by God. This is taught by the Scripture. And let me tell you, young men today, if you don't plan to assume that responsibility and to fulfill that role in your home, it may be better that you not establish a home. Because that's going to be your part to play. That's going to be your responsibility. That's going to be your obligation to take care of. And you need to assume that role, and you need to understand that going into the home, and then as you establish your home, you need to take that responsibility and fill your place as the head of that home and that family. Paul teaches that in 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter. The head of Christ is God. The head of every man, of every woman is the man. And the head of man is Christ. And God has placed us in that arrangement. And remember that we have told you over and over again, there's not an arrangement better than those which God hath given. In Ephesians 5, verse 23, the husband is head of the wife. Even as Christ is head of the church, and he is Savior of the body. And let me tell you, young ladies today, older women as well, and we'll talk more about this perhaps tomorrow morning, you need to let your husband take that place in the home. And it will avoid a lot of problems that might otherwise be experienced by you. Number three, fellows, we have obligations to our wives. And we need to take care of those responsibilities. Our responsibility to our wife is to love her. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. Let me ask you today, fellas, do you love your wife? And I suspect every one of you would say, you know, I love her more than anybody else. I hope you do. But don't forget what love means. And it might do well for you to go back sometime. I'm going to take time to do it this morning and read from 1 Corinthians 13, Paul as he describes love. It is patient and kind. It's not puffed up. Well, now, are we as patient and kind with our wives as we really ought to be? If we love them, we will be. When we suited them in courtship and we developed trust and confidence and love, remember, we developed the love until we would do just about anything in the world to please them, wouldn't we? Now, I read in the scripture people who have left their first love. I don't think he was talking about love to their wives, but the principle could be applied anywhere. And sometimes we leave our first love. That doesn't mean that we don't love our wives, but we may not love them as we once did. Or we would treat them better than we do sometimes. Colossians 3, verse 19. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. Do you ever feel some tendencies of bitterness and hatred and ill will toward your companion? And you might say, well, you know, sometimes she just really gets on my nerves. Yeah, I suspect she does. But you know, if you really love her like you ought to, that won't bother you very long. Remember the things that you used to do for her that maybe you don't do anymore. Do you remember her birthday, your wedding anniversary, special occasions like you used to remember, and you'd bring her flowers and gifts? And you know why you did that? I know why you did it. Do you ever do that anymore? Why? Why did you quit? How did you happen to get over that? Some of you young husbands and fathers here today will remember a few years ago I was here in a meeting and I talked about this a little bit one day. And I asked how many of you, when you went to the car, would open the door for your wife and help her in like you used to during the period of courtship. And some of the fellows got talking about that, said, we noticed old Truman, when he'd go out there to the van, he'd open the door for Stella and help her in, and then he'd close the door. And then when they'd come to church, he'd get out and he'd go around and open the door and he'd help her out. And these young men were impressed. Until they found out that handle was broken off of the inside of the door, and that's the only way Stella could get out. But do you ever do that anymore? Why don't you surprise your wife someday and open the door for her and help her and attend to her needs and her wishes and her desires like you used to? Now, I'll tell you what's going to happen right up front. She's going to wonder what you're up to. But if that was a habit with us, see, now don't go away today and say that, you know, I believe old Truman thinks if we don't open the door for our wives that we don't love her. That's not what I'm saying. But you know, there's so many little things that we can do that would indicate and express our love and appreciation for her. Just a few days ago, Stella and I talked to a couple that were celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary. Her husband bought her some roses. She said that was the first time in her life that she remembered him getting flowers for her. Now, they're wonderful people. He loves her as much as any husband could love his wife. But you can't imagine what that did to her. I visited with a lady one time. They were in business in the little city of Deal City. They were well-known people in the community. And as she sat and visited with me, she said, "Truman, I think my husband loves me just as much as any husband loves his wife, but," she said, "he never expresses that love in any way." She said, "he has never complimented me that I can remember on one thing." You think about that. She said, "on any dress that I have made, on any meal that I have prepared, on any activity that I've been involved in," she said, "to my knowledge, he has never complimented one thing that I have done." That really bothered her because she saw other husbands as they complimented and favored their wives in many ways. You know, it would have done her so much good if he could just have expressed that a little differently. Now, one of our responsibilities is to love our wives, and if we do that and we're able to show them that we do, then we're going to be heirs together for the grace of life, and that's exactly the thing that Peter taught us that we should be as husband and wife. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. I hear some husbands talking to their wives like they were slaves. Surely you're not any one of those that would. But we have responsibilities to love them and not to be bitter against them. As men in the home, number four, we have obligations to our children. I want to reiterate again some things that I read yesterday morning from Ephesians 6, verse 4. Paul said, "Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." I believe that's our responsibility. I believe that we have a duty to perform, and that's to teach our children and to guide them and to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I believe that we're living in a society when people think that religion is for women and children. We've got a lot of men that think that. But I want to tell you again that we are the head of that family, and it is primarily our responsibility to do that. Certainly we're going to have the cooperation from our wives. We're going to talk about that in the morning. But I want you and me to take the lead and initiate some kind of program that will teach and bring our children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I think God expects that of us, and if we have refused that responsibility, we'll be weighed in the balances and found wanting. Now, when we stand before God in the judgment, we're not going to be judged as a family, I know that. We're not going to be judged as a congregation of people. We're not going to be judged as a nation of people. We call this a Christian nation. But we will be judged individually. But let me tell you, when we stand there and are judged, maybe my family will be there. But I'll be judged for the way that I have treated my family and for whether I have or have not brought up my children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And let me tell you, every father here today, whether you are a saint or a sinner, you have responsibility to your home and to your children. And don't think that you're going to dodge that responsibility just by not becoming involved in the work of the church. Because I believe that you're still going to answer for being the head of that family and the father of those children, and you need to assume that responsibility and fulfill your role well. Number five, we are expected to be the provider for the family. In 1 Timothy 5, verse 8, he that provideth not for his own, and especially those of his own house, has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. It's a serious thing for husbands and fathers not to provide for their families. We're living in a generation when some are not willing to do that. I don't think we have a problem with the men of this assembly not providing for their families. But that is our obligation. That is our responsibility. I know sometimes it seems today that we need more than one income to provide for the family. But I thought a lot of times if we could get back to the original plan, it would solve so many problems in our nation today. Husbands as providers, wives as homemakers. And I'm not going to tell you today that it's wrong for a wife to work out of the home. I'm going to discuss that more at length tomorrow, the Lord willing. But I will tell you, if we had those women out of the workplace and in the home where they really need to be performing, you know, the unemployment rate might go down because there would be more jobs available for men who need to assume their responsibility in providing for their families. Now, don't misunderstand this statement that I've made, and don't go away and say, well, you know, I think old Truman thinks that if a wife works away from home, she's going to be lost. Truman doesn't think that at all. But I do think that we miss a lot when we get away from the original plan. And another thing that I want to point out here today is the fact that you and I, as husbands and fathers, likely will never be able to make a living. You know why? Because we raise our standard of living every time we make a little more. I told Stella one time, I thought we'd do better if we tried to live on what we made instead of trying to make a living. Do you see the difference? Because if we make a little more, we raise our standard of living and we live a little more. And the first thing you know, then we can't hardly make ends meet. But then we do a little better and then we raise our standard of living. You know, you can include so many things in making a living until you can't make ends meet. But if we could change our mind, and you know, Paul said that we need to renew our minds. And we probably need to redesign our thinking today. And one of the things that we could do well in changing our mind and renewing our minds about is to be content with food and raiment. Can you do that? The apostle said, with food and raiment, therewith be content. Can you do that? Somebody said, well, yeah, I think I could. Well, somebody said, I'll tell you what, I'd like to have just a little bit more than a living. Well, I guess I would too. But then, see, the first thing you know, we began to escalate and we climbed that ladder again. And we want just a little more than a living, and I don't think God disapproves of that at all. But then the next thing you know, we've raised our standard of living then to meet that level, and then we want just a little more than a living, and the first thing you know, we're just out there grabbing for everything in the world that we can have, and if we're not careful, we have forgotten the design and the purpose of the home, and we've gotten ourselves so involved with the world that we don't have time for our homes and our families. And I see a lot of people, men who are trying to provide for their families, that are seldom at home. Many times they're miles and miles away from home, and they don't have time with their wives, and they don't have time for their children. Why? Because they're providers and they're trying to provide more and more and more. Talk to some of my fellow evangelists here today who have had people call them and they'd say, where is there a church up here that we can go to worship? Up here where? And they'll tell you some far off place that they've moved to and say, well, what are you doing up there? I didn't know you'd move. Well, I had an opportunity for a transfer with my company. And it seemed like that it was a once in a lifetime opportunity for me. And you know, they checked out about the schools because we don't want our children raised in just any kind of educational environment, do we? And they checked out about the medical facilities because we're not about to raise our families away off from a doctor in a good hospital somewhere. And they had checked out about the environment because we're not going to move our children just into any kind of environment. And all of these things look so good. And you know, with this advancement and this promotion and all of this extra money I was going to make, we moved and they woke up Sunday morning and they said, where are we going to go to church? You know, I would have thought that was the first thing they should have looked at about. And let me tell you today, husbands and fathers, when we talk about providing for our families, I want to tell you there is something that is just as important as providing for them in a material way, maybe more important. And that's providing for their spiritual well-being. We had a brother in the congregation over at Deal City that had an opportunity for a promotion. Good advancement, big money. He went to look out about the job. He went for an interview. He went over the weekend. You know why he went on the weekend? We have a congregation in that city, and he wanted to go to church there. And he did. Wasn't many people there. And he asked the brethren, he said, what time do you meet on Wednesday evenings? And they said, well, we don't meet on Wednesday evenings anymore. Said it just seemed like people wouldn't come, and so we discontinued our service on Wednesday evening. And he said, well, how many do you have to come on Sunday night? And the brother told him, said, well, we just recently have quit having services on Sunday night because not too many people would come, and it just seemed like it was hard to get everybody out. So he said, we just meet on Sunday morning. He said the service was not very edifying. Seemed like everything was negative and downhill. And he said, Truman, can you imagine me moving my family into a situation like that? Three children. And he said, there are a lot of things in this world that mean more than money. I can appreciate people like that, can't you? With those kind of values. I'll just have to tell you, the man has done well. You don't have to take the first opportunity that comes along, because people with those kind of values in their lives are going to do well. And let me tell you, as fathers, not only do you have the responsibility to provide for your children in a physical and material way, but you have the responsibility to provide for their spiritual well-being, and you will give an account to God. And you need to be out front. You need to be the very first to make those decisions and be sure that you keep the kingdom of God first in your life. Number six, we're to be examples. We are to be examples. You know, Jesus taught every Christian to be an example. Matthew 5, verse 16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify the Father which is in heaven. That's our responsibility. As the head of the family, we ought to be the example. Just like Paul said to Timothy, he was to be an example in many, many things. I think of us as fathers and husbands in a home. We need to be examples of all of these principles that we talk about. And did you know that this is perhaps the greatest way that we have to teach anybody anything? His example. That's what Jesus was. Peter said he left us an example that we should follow in his steps. And I believe that every one of us are impressed more with the teachings of Jesus because of his example than we could have been without it. To the elders of churches, he said, be examples to the flock. How would you like to have a group of men making decisions for you and asking you to do certain things they wouldn't do themselves? You wouldn't like it. And I'll tell you what, you'd get real noisy about it, wouldn't you? I went to a place to hold a meeting one time in California. When I was there the year before, they had a lot of people. When I went there that time, they had about 30. I said, where is everybody? They told me of an incident that happened just prior to my coming. And one of the men in the lead of the church there had gotten up one Sunday morning and preached a sermon against the use of tobacco. And they said he got hard and he preached for a long time. That may have been what bothered him more than what he said was the length of time that he spoke. But then when the services were over, he was standing out in front of the church building smoking a cigarette. Now, I didn't bring this up to tell you that it's good, bad, or indifferent. I will if you want to ask me sometime, but somebody walked up and tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, what does this mean? You spent all this time telling us that we ought not use tobacco, and here you are smoking. He said, it's not a matter of do as I do, but do as I say. I'm surprised there was 30 people left, aren't you? That's not what it is. Our example before others would say, do as I do. Now, fathers, what do you want your little boys to do? I can tell you about what they're going to do. They're going to do about what you do. If you don't believe that, you look at them, you watch them. I can remember as a little boy, I tried real hard to step in the footprints of my father. You know, we lived on the farm, and after a little shower of rain, he'd walk down across the end of the field and look at the crops, and I'd follow him down there. And those footprints were left there. You know, after a little sprinkle of rain, you can see every mark. And I'd try to step where he did. I couldn't do it. My legs weren't long enough. And I can remember that I'd get back, and I'd run and jump. I'd try to get from one to the other. I wanted to be like my daddy. I don't suppose that I will ever be as big a man as he was in some ways. I finally grew in stature until I could step in his footprints. I got to where I was bigger than he was physically, and I weighed a lot more than he did. But you know, those are really not the qualities that count the most. It always bothered me for a father who was a smoker to paddle his little boy for smoking. That done something to me. It bothers me for a father who dips and chews to paddle his little boy for getting into his tobacco. But I'll just tell you, fathers, they're going to want to be like you and me. They're going to want to be like we are. We go to a lot of places. I want you to talk to my fellow evangelists again. I don't want you to think I'm making these things up on my own. But we have a lot of people that say, listen, our children live in a certain place. I hear you're going over there for a meeting. They're not going to church like they ought to. Would you go over there and see if you can get them interested in the church and see if you can get them to come? Of course we'll go. And we spend a lot of time, a lot of days, a lot of nights sitting up and talking and conversing with people about the value of church attendance. And I get to looking at those people, and having known many of them for many years, I look at their past record, and you know what they were doing when their families were young and their children were small? I tell you what a lot of them were doing. They were treating the church with a lot of neglect and carelessness. They were not as faithful to attend the assemblies of the church as they ought to be. And you know what? They're going to grow up to be just like you and me. Fathers, it is so important today that you be a good example to your little boys and little girls and to your wife. One of the reasons that I want to talk about these subjects this week is because of the need of leadership in our churches across America. I want you to talk to my fellow evangelists again. One of the problems that we find in so many places is the lack of qualified leadership. Talk to them. I'll tell you this morning, every church in the Brotherhood doesn't have the leadership that you have in Plainview. Every church that we go to does not have the leadership that they have in Baytown. And you young husbands and fathers today need to understand that now. And you need to begin to prepare. We don't need to try to make a preacher out of every male member of a congregation. That's a mistake. But if we can have men who have given attention to their lives and to their families and have filled themselves with the knowledge of the will of God and by experience have brought up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, they develop into qualified men and families that will testify to their ability to take care of people. And you know, one of the qualifications of an elder was to be able to take care of his own, because if he can't take care of his own house, how can he take care of the house of the Lord? And I'll tell you what, your example before your children is going to be the greatest influence for them to be what they need to be, for you to do what you need to do, as anything that I could mention to you today. Now, there are many negative responsibilities. We are not to be bitter against our wives. We're not to defraud our companions. We're not to provoke our children lest they be discouraged. And we could spend a lot of time on all of these, but I think that we've spent enough time this morning that it ought to help to encourage you to apply yourself as a man, to take your place as a husband and father in the home and fulfill your responsibilities in the home, so that it could be a haven of blessing and a place of peace. You know, there's nothing more beautiful than a Christian home. There's nothing more tragic than a home that is torn with bitterness and strife and anger and disagreement. God hadn't planned that it should be that way, but that it should be for the good of man, for the benefit of his family. And when our homes are benefited, our churches are going to be benefited. When our churches are benefited, our communities are going to prosper and profit by it. When our communities profit by that, our nation as a whole is going to profit by it. And when our nation profits by it, the nations of the earth are going to be better. You know, we talk about influence, a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. But we usually talk about a bad apple in a barrel of good apples. And they said, first thing you know, the whole barrel is rotten. And that's what happens. That's the influence. But did you know good influence can work just as well? And if we as husbands and fathers today can be a good influence, and that influence begins to grow and spread. The good influence just does like evil influence. It just gets better and better and bigger and bigger. And wouldn't it be wonderful that we could have that kind of influence until the whole was leavened? If you're here today and not a Christian, if you are a husband or a father and you've never obeyed the gospel, I want to encourage you to do that. And take your place as the head of that wife, and as the leader in that home, and take your place there as a Christian, and bring up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and provide for them a Christian influence. If you're here a young man who has aspirations for a Christian home and you've never obeyed the gospel, you need to do that this morning. Or not only young men, but young women, ladies, if you're not a Christian, you need to be one. If you're a Christian and you've left the church, you need to return. We have an invitation song selected, and you can make a lot of excuses as to why you shouldn't come this morning. You know, one man said, I bought a piece of ground. I just need to go and see it. I pray thee have me excused. Another said, I bought 5 yoke of oxen. I go to prove them. I pray thee have me excused. Another said, I married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. You know, just understood he couldn't come. He's married a wife. We can just make a lot of excuses, or we could be like the writer of our invitation song this morning. Just as I am. Without one plea. No excuses. I come. Would you come while we stand to sing?